This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable is a list of who you call fair game for the government, and teens use text messaging to get sex advice. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our bureau in New York City, John McWhorter. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Callie Crossley joins us. She's a social and cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. She joins us from WGBH there in Boston and from member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Nat Irvin, who's a professor of future studies at Wake Forest University. All right, folks, yesterday we all saw it splashed across the banner of the USA Today, and that is this massive database that the NSA has collected, the National Security Agency, collecting phone call records of tens of millions of Americans using data provided by AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South. The suggestion here by the spy agency is that they're using this data to analyze calling patterns in an effort to detect terrorist activity. But John McWhorter, the complaints are that most of the calls are those of what the press, what the media is calling, quote, average Americans.
And I think that that's a wonderful thing. Until I am smart enough to figure out something else that they could do to capture some unfortunately very disturbed people that want to do some really horrible things in this country, I really cannot criticize that plan, and I am perfectly willing to give up my privacy and have the government know who I call and when if what they're doing really does help capture people. Now, what's important is that I'm no fan of the Bush administration. I'm really appalled at all sorts of things that they've done. But I also know that you can also slip into a kind of a recreational groove of hating the Bush administration because they're such delicious fun to hate. And in this case, if it can be shown that this program will protect us from being blown up in the subway, then as far as I'm concerned, the only problem is that they were, as usual, so private about it and that they're not going to be honest in answering questions. But what else would one do? They're trying to protect us.
Nat Irvin, we heard ever since 9/11 that we're going to have to give up some of the civil liberties, that we live in a new world post 9/11. Isn't this just part of it?
Well, it is, Ed, and I think that John pretty much captures where the American people are with this. I mean, polls show that 50% of us think that it's okay. 50% of us are really worried about it. I think really what's happening here, we may be at a tipping point, and I think it reminds me a little bit of a Richard Pryor joke where his wife finds him in a compromising position, and he says, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Where we're caught right now is this thing about whether or not we believe what the Bush administration says to us. Now, the fact is, the NSA, as powerful as it is, it does not strike the fear into the hearts of Americans, say, for example, like the IRS does. I mean, everybody knows somebody who's been audited, but you don't know anybody who's really been impacted by the NSA. As far as we're concerned, most Americans think that the NSA, if they're doing anything, it is after the Arabs. So that is fine. But the point is now, we may be at a point where Americans start to say, I'm not so sure that I believe what you say you are doing is actually what you're doing. I'm not at the point to suggest to you that General Hayden, for example, will not be confirmed, because if he's not confirmed, then you will say that we've gotten to that tipping point where Americans are really suspicious. But right now, I think most of us will give the government the benefit of the doubt to say that they're basically using algorithms to try to pick up patterns to determine whether there are connections between people who may want to do harm to us.
But, Kelly, isn't the real concern the idea of what Nat touches on, and that's the tipping point, the idea of when and where does it stop and who stops it, the idea that the NSA has contracted with major corporations like AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South? What's next?
I think that's absolutely true. I think that most Americans for a long time thought of privacy as really a core value. And so to see right now that coming up against some fears about terrorism and then our natural wanting to be patriotic and support what our government is doing to protect us, there's a lot going on there. So what I would say that black folks really have been the canary in the mine on this issue, because not too long ago there was COINTELPRO. So we know what an abuse looks like. You start off, maybe you're just trying to do a general data mining and just figure out what the call pattern's on. The next thing you know, everybody from their grandmother on down to the two-year-old are being surveyed. And for what? And then it also gets back to the question of, well, who makes the determination about who is dangerous? I think, for me anyway, the fact that in December, when the warrantless eavesdropping was brought to bear, and if we learned about that, And the president said, at no time or is there any domestic calls. We're talking about international calls. We're talking about calls that may come in to a domestic situation. But one half has to be international. That's what we're looking for. That determines the level that we need to be concerned about in terms of terrorists. And now we find out that it's all domestic calls and it's any American and it's the average American, as we've said earlier. And I think a lot of people, even though they want to say, listen, I remember 9/11, and I'll give up some rights if I can be protected. Right. But this strikes at the heart of people saying, wait a minute now, how far are you going?
I don't understand what the motivation of the administration would be to listen in on the phone calls of somebody who's living in Illinois and living a very ordinary life. I understand the slippery slope argument, but what would they gain from just minding other people's business for the heck of it?
And we should note,
the same argument with COINTELPRO.
Let me just say this, folks. We should note that this is not, this report at least, was not about actually listening in. It was about collecting data from these corporations. Go ahead, Callie.
But I would just say that the same argument could be made about COINTELPRO.
But the idea there was that anybody could be, for example, a communist, and that cut across all kinds of lines.
But Nat, isn't the real concern? I want to get back to what I mentioned before. There is this whole question of, particularly with this administration, power run amok.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. Who are you going to believe? I mean, when you look at the president now, whose ratings are at 31%, and he comes and tells you, no, I mean, he doesn't exactly say I didn't inhale. He doesn't exactly say read my lips. But he says so many things that people are beginning to be suspicious of. And then when you start to think, John, in terms of the slippery slope, it's not necessarily, I think it's wrong to think of this the power of the NSA in context of only one administration. What we have to think about is in context of the long term. You can't always assume that people who are in power will use that power judiciously.
We have to be on guard. But yeah. We can't reject what they're doing on principle. That's all. Yes, we have to be watchdogs
I agree with that.
Right. But well, let me move on. Since we have a point of agreement, let me move on and get a couple of other subjects in here. This out of San Francisco, what we're seeing is the launch of the nation's first text messaging program aimed at young people ages 12 through 24 who may have questions about sex and health, and they can receive the answers instantly through text messaging. The text messaging service is called Sex Info. It's open to anyone with a cell phone that has text messaging. All right. Nat. pick up on this. Good idea, bad idea. And we should note that this is starting in San Francisco, aimed, it says, especially for black kids whose rates of sexually transmitted disease have increased tremendously in the past year or so.
Oh, I think it's a fabulous idea. I will say this, full disclosure. I'm the parent, my wife and I are the parent of three children who are grown. The youngest is 19. So maybe if our kids were much younger, we may be a little more, we would have a little more fear about it. But in general, you got to know that education is the key to trying to solve a lot of the problems related to sexual education. We make a lot of assumptions that people know that they're being taught by their parents or they're learning in churches, they're being taught in schools. And it's just not the case. And if we can use technology in this way, now, of course, you have to assume that the information that they're going to receive is accurate information that is helpful.
I don't know if you have to assume it. You have to hope.
Well, I'm saying if you're going to support this program, you have to assume that it is. But I would say this, that it does not absolve parental responsibility. I hope that it will not do that. I just hope that it creates within young people a sense that they can get information that they wouldn't get otherwise.
Now, Callie, we should note that some of the questions they talk about is if your condom breaks during sex, et cetera, it gives you that quick fix. Well, not quick fix, but quick answer to what you should do immediately. One would assume at that point that might be really beneficial to young people who oftentimes are ignorant.
Absolutely. And poll after poll demonstrates that kids and, in fact, adults don't really have correct answers about this.
Yes.
I think Nat's point is really well taken, and that is you have to make sure that the information that is being text is correct. But once that is put in place, I can't think of a better program for teens. Of course, now you know the NSA will be reading this and listening in on it. So, I mean, they have to worry about that down the line.
Here's the funny thing, John McWhorter. We teased about it, but part of it is, part and parcel of it is, sex education is not just lost on teenagers, but adults. When you talk with people in this country, this might be something that we really should take a greater look at, the idea of sex education in this country, not only for teens, but adults in general.
Well, of course. With the breakdown of schools in particular, it's clear that that problem's not going to be solved for a while, so we can't rely on them. And then with the family breakdown that's particularly rampant in a lot of the communities that I think this initiative in San Francisco is really aimed at, it's clear that even if adults did know what the answers were, a lot of these kids really don't have anybody who they're that close to. And so let's use this medium, which to them is like basically a third hand, to get the information out so that we can have maybe things to be slightly better for the next generation they're about to produce.
One more thing I would like to add, and that is that a lot of parents don't, even though they talk to kids about everything else, they don't talk to them about this. And one of the most popular shows on Oxygen Network is the sex show, where the woman sits there and just answers the questions for adults. So clearly a need.
It's all right, let me turn to something else. We talked about power running amok, and this may, in fact, be freedom of speech running amok. A popular DJ in New York City, star of the Star and Buck Wild show, was fired this week. We should note that he has had a glorified history of saying almost anything on the radio. He had been fired from another popular radio station here in New York and rehired, I think, about a year or so ago. This time, he was having an on-air battle with a nemesis, they call it here in the media, a DJ on another station. Star said he would offer $500 to a listener who would be able to tell him where his nemesis, again, using that word, where the daughter went to school. Star went on to say, "Yes, I disrespect your seed. If you didn't hear me, I said I would do an R. Kelly on your seed, on your little baby girl." That the reference to the alleged question of whether or not R. Kelly had sex with an underaged young lady with the circulated video that so many people saw. He went on to talk about the other DJ's wife, calling her, forgive this language, cover your children's ears, a whore, and also suggesting that she was a lo mein eater. She is Asian, of Asian descent. We don't want to talk so much about Star in this instance as we do the idea of this shock radio theater and whether or not we have gone far beyond the pale, Callie.
Oh, we've long passed this. I mean, there's the Michael Savage incident. There's Howard Stern, which has laid the context for all of this. I mean, we can name chapter and verse. Also, there was the Hot 97 people who got in trouble before. This is disgusting. I hope that it is highlighted that this is definitely sexual assault, verbal sexual assault, and it's about violence as much as it is about sex. And I don't, you know, we can't stand up enough and say more strongly how disgusting this is, and I'm glad the guy was fired.
Yeah,
you know,
I should
worries
know. I was
me
gonna
about
say
this.
If I did not know, Clear Channel did in fact fire him. Go ahead. Sorry.
What worries me about this also is you talk about the violence. I mean, there is a thread of violence, for example, with Hot 97 in New York City, where three times there have been shots fired outside of a radio station in Greenwich Village to the point that they've now been asked to leave their building. And this is part of the whole culture of rappers battling each other and it getting to the point of people being in streets and hotel parking lots actually shooting each other. A woman has been caught up in this, one of the Hot 97 incidents. There's something wrong with it, and we can talk about how it's not a good thing, and this is said at community forums and on radio shows like this all the time, and yet it keeps on going, and then we hear that there is a problem with the way black people are portrayed in the media. And unfortunately, I hate to see us doing it to ourselves in this case. I'm trying to think of a white-dominated or a mainstream music industry where gunfire is a normal aspect of exchange, not to mention this kind of high-pitched, extremely abusive dialogue. It's beyond Howard Stern. And then you get the guns.
Oh, gosh. I think two colleagues have really covered a lot of this. The only thing I would add to this is to say I was puzzled by why did it take so long for the community to react. In fact, it turns out that the local city councilman in New York was the one who really brought it to the attention. What happened to the listeners? I mean, what happened to the people who?
Well, but you've got to figure that the people that turn into this kind of radio want to hear
it.
You know, those that don't aren't going to listen to it, and they won't hear it.
That's exactly my point. I'm trying to figure out, I mean, don't you have any common sense of decency when somebody is talking about assaulting a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old? I mean, don't you have any sense of personal responsibility to your own self, to your own community? And, I mean, you know, the guy says he's the, who since apologized, we know, he says that he's trying to be the black shock jock, Howard Stern. The difference between this guy and Howard Stern is Stern has got a high intelligence. This guy is not even smart enough to know that you can't assault somebody.
Now, come on. We don't know. We don't know.
Look.
We don't know what his SATs were versus Howard Stern.
I don't know. All I know is this is a stupid thing to have done.
All right. We can agree that it may have been a stupid thing to do.
The context is such out here now, and the crudeness and the lack of civility, that some of the listeners, I'm not going to say all, I'm not going to paint them all with the same broad brush, really just didn't take it seriously, sad. Yeah.
It is all kind of theatrical in its way. Yeah. I mean, that's really what he meant. But nevertheless, to be theatrical
about
raping somebody's
little girl.
Here's
the frightening part of this. I would bet, without having seen it, but knowing who listens to his show, it's listened to by a lot of teenagers, a lot of young people, and what we're missing here, perhaps, is this is what many of them have grown up on. They're very used to that and enjoy it, quite frankly.
Oh, it's theater. It's entertainment for them. It's just a matter of when do you go too far with it being entertainment. South Park is nasty, too. People bleeding, sexist jokes, racist jokes. And somehow
I mean
they never
the
push that far. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the culture. But raping someone's little girl? Somehow we have to draw a line somewhere.
Really? Absolutely. I cannot understand the humor in this. I don't get the context. I'm completely away from it. I can't get it.
Well, in fact, we should note that sometimes consequences come to you quickly, and Clear Channel did act to fire Star of Star and Buckwild. All right, folks, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you right here on the radio next week. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next week.